baseball!
This is the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast, the only podcast devoted entirely to Arkansas baseball, featuring interviews with coaches and guests from across the country.
Welcome in Kendall Rogers of D1Baseball.com, Joe Healy of Baseball America, Chris Burke is with the ESPN SEC Network.
Now from Fayetteville, here's your host, Matt Jones.
The Razorbacks are 7-0 entering what should be their biggest challenge yet in 2020. Three games at the Shriners College Classic in Houston against Oklahoma, Texas, and Baylor, all from the Big 12. It has been a strong start to the season for Arkansas, which has not trailed through 63 innings against Eastern Illinois and Gonzaga. The Razorbacks have scored 57 runs and only allowed 18 this season. It's not only been a great couple of weeks for the team, but also for several players individually. Heston Kerstad and freshman Robert Moore have both already earned National Player of the Week awards. Naturally, they've been SEC Players of the Week, too, and Connor Noland has been the SEC Pitcher of the Week after an 11-strikeout performance in the first game of the season against Eastern Illinois. Christian Franklin and Casey Opitz are off to strong starts at the plate. Several relief pitchers have thrown well for the Razorbacks. We'll discuss a lot of that today on the podcast a little bit later with Brett Dolan of the SEC Network, who will give his thoughts on the Razorbacks' start to the season. Plus, we'll ask him about going back to Houston this weekend to call the Shriners Classic games on AT&T Sportsnet. Brett is the former play-by-play man for the Houston Astros. We'll also be joined today by Eddie Radosovich of Soonerscoop.com. Eddie will give us a preview of the OU baseball team, which Arkansas will see first in Houston on Friday afternoon at 3 o'clock. The Whole Hog Baseball Podcast is brought to you in part by First Watch, the daytime cafe, now with three locations in Northwest Arkansas, in Fayetteville on College Avenue, in Rogers on Village Parkway, and in Bentonville on Southeast Walton Boulevard, a breakfast, brunch, and lunch experience that feels good and tastes even better. For more, visit firstwatch.com.
Welcome back to the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast.
How good are the Razorbacks this year? What can we learn from the games against Eastern Illinois and Gonzaga? Those are the questions as Arkansas enters the Shriners Classic undefeated this weekend. The Razorbacks enter the event as a top 10 team in all of the major college polls, ranked as high as number 2 by the National Collegiate Baseball Writers Association and number 5 in the USA Today Coaches Poll. The coaches poll, by the way, is used as the poll of record by our publications, which are the Democrat Gazette, WholeHogSports.com, and Hogs Illustrated. The coaches poll is a little different from other polls. Other polls will put out a preseason poll, and then they'll update weekly beginning after the first weekend. The coaches poll waits until after the third weekend of the season to update, and so it will not update again until after the games at the Shriners Classic. That number 5 ranking for Arkansas in the coaches poll is from the preseason. The Razorback sweep of Gonzaga last weekend really feels like a feather in the cap for the program. Just a week earlier, the Bulldogs had gone 2-2 against some pretty good competition in Surprise, Arizona. One of their wins there was against Oregon State, ranked number 25 at the time. Gonzaga is a program that's been to the NCAA tournament twice in the last 4 years. It's picked to win the West Coast Conference again this year. It's a program that's traditionally produced really good pitching. For instance, Marco Gonzalez, who's a left-hander, used to pitch for the St. Louis Cardinals. Now, I believe he's with the Mariners, used to pitch for Gonzaga. In fact, I saw him once pitch against Arkansas through a complete game shutout against the Razorbacks at the Royal Spring Training Facility in Surprise, just outside of Phoenix. We saw Gonzaga throw out more really good pitchers against the Razorbacks last weekend in Fayetteville. The Saturday starter, Alec Jacob, a right-hander, a junior right-hander, is a preseason All-American by a couple of publications, and he might have one of the best breaking pitches the Razorbacks will see all year. The Friday starter, Mac Lardner, a left-hander, power pitcher, 15 strikeouts through two games against good teams, BYU and Arkansas. And at the plate, it looked like Gonzaga had a lot of capable hitters. Something that stood out to me was the number of big, strong hitters, big, strong physical players in the middle of that lineup. You don't see that a lot from a mid-major program, and you saw it from Gonzaga. The Bulldogs look to me like a team that could have a really good year and be one of those mid-major programs that could give Arkansas an RPI boost when the postseason rolls around. I asked Dave Van Horn after Sunday's game how good he thought Gonzaga could be, and this is what he had to say.
We'll definitely be following them, and I think they're going to win a lot of games. I think
those first two starting pitchers they have are just crafty. They're good. They're not overpowering, but they're going to get them into the sixth and seventh inning, and they're going to score runs with those big hitters.
Arkansas should see more solid pitching Friday against Oklahoma. The Sooners will start junior right-hander Cade Cavalli, who is a top 50 draft prospect according to Baseball America and who pitched last season for Team USA. Arkansas catcher Casey Opitz, by the way, caught some of Cavalli's games with the national team last summer. Cavalli has a power arm. He's a lot like Will Klein from Eastern Illinois, but I think a lot more polished. He'll consistently throw a fastball in the upper 90s, also has a really good curveball. He's pitched well in both of his starts this year against Virginia and Illinois State. And last fall, Arkansas saw him. He needed only 13 pitches to retire the side in the only inning that he threw against Arkansas in a fall scrimmage at Baum Stadium. OU's pitching staff shut down the Razorbacks that night in September. They only allowed six hits, two runs through nine innings. They played 14 innings in that scrimmage, but hitting stats weren't kept after the ninth inning. So Cavalli is far from the only good OU pitcher. The Sooners bullpen really is among the best in the country, and that's something that Dave Van Horn spoke about this week.
Very impressed with their pitching staff, and they just kept running arms at us. And then you look at their team ERA right now, I think it's under two. I think ours is just a little bit over two. So it's what we thought. They could really pitch, and that's what, you know, the so-called baseball experts going into the season were saying, that, you know, Oklahoma is going to be a threat because they can really pitch.
Before we get to Brett Dolan, a few thoughts on the outstanding play from Arkansas second baseman Robert Moore, who was named Perfect Games National Player of the Week after the Gonzaga series. I cannot remember a Razorback freshman position player who had as good of an all-around weekend this early in the season as Moore had against Gonzaga. He was obviously great at the plate, 8 for 12, 9 runs batted in, 4 walks, 4 runs scored. He had multiple RBI hits in every game of the series against the Bulldogs. Offensive stats are what will win you those Player of the Week awards as a position player, and of course he did that. Mentioned the Perfect Game Award, was also the SEC Co-Player of the Week. And by the way, a lot of people have asked why he was not the SEC Freshman of the Week last week when he was the SEC Player of the Week. The way that works is that sports information directors will nominate a player for individual awards. Then it's up to the league office to choose how it wants to hand those awards out. And in all the years that I've covered the SEC, I've never seen a player win multiple awards in the same week. You're either the Player of the Week or you're the Freshman of the Week. You're the Pitcher of the Week, or you're the Freshman of the Week. It's just a way that the SEC has to recognize more players on a weekly basis. But like I said, the offensive stats, those are what will win you those awards. But it's when you add in everything else last week that I thought made Robert Moore's performance so good. In the field, I can't remember a middle infielder at Arkansas who can make plays look so effortless. His hands are so quick. He's just so smooth as a middle infielder. And that was his reputation coming out of high school. But it's still impressive, I think, to see it so early as a college player. Everyone wants to talk about the glove flip that he made in Game 3 that made SportsCenter. But there were a lot of other great defensive plays throughout the weekend. He helped turn a couple of double plays with Casey Martin at shortstop. And a play that stood out to me in the finale was when Moore charged the ball on the opposite side of second base, picked it up, threw it to first, and got the runner out at first. Then there are the instinct plays. And the one that I'm thinking about specifically is when Moore went from first to third on a walk by Heston Kerstad in the finale. The shift was on. Gonzaga had overloaded the right side of the infield against Kerstad, and the third baseman was basically playing like a shortstop. Kerstad walks, Moore goes to second, the third baseman's real lackadaisical getting back out to third base, and Moore just sprinted over there without a throw. Those instincts, a high baseball IQ, you might hear a lot of people refer to it as, that's what Arkansas's coach has talked about a lot before Moore made it to campus. It's what they saw in the preseason, and it's one of the reasons that he's the second baseman, the starting second baseman now for the team. And it's something that I think probably was formed through being around big league players a lot growing up. Of course, his dad is the GM of the Kansas City Royals, And for a story this week, I spoke to Morris High School coach Will Gordon of Shawnee Mission East High School in Kansas about those characteristics, those traits that have allowed him to have success so early as a college player. And here's a little bit of what Will Gordon had to say.
You know, age is only a number. His baseball IQ and the fact that he's been around the game forever certainly has made up for any age difference he would have had. You know, he's played literally all over the world and in some of the biggest competitions with Team USA and all of that. And I think that's really done a great job to prepare him. You know, he started as a freshman at East, and so he's always been playing with guys that are older than him. And it's just, once again, the kind of caliber of player he is. No situation is going to be too big. And I don't think it really matters if it's Gonzaga or LSU that's going to be going up against him. He's going to come out and compete the very best he can. And, you know, every time I talk to him, it's always about the Hawks winning. It's never about his own personal level of play. He's all about, you know, whether or not Arkansas gets that W at the end of the day.
For more from my conversation with Gordon, go to WholeHogSports.com, click on the baseball tab at the top of the page. The story is titled The KC Kid. It also includes a lot of thoughts from Arkansas's hitting coach Nate Thompson about how Moore went from a 0.83 hitter to a 3.75 hitter over the course of one weekend.
WholeHogSports.com has the largest, most experienced staff of reporters covering sports in Arkansas. Football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. You'll find it at WholeHogSports.com. The website includes up-to-minute news, daily commentaries, and award-winning photography from the staffs of Hogs Illustrated and the Democrat Gazette. For subscriptions, call 1-800-757-6277. That's 1-800-757-6277. Or visit us online today. WholeHogSports.com.
Welcome back to the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast, brought to you in part by First Watch. For breakfast, brunch, and lunch, check out one of three locations in Northwest Arkansas, in Fayetteville on College Avenue, in Rogers on Village Parkway, and in Bentonville on Southeast Walton Boulevard. For more, firstwatch.com. Brett Dolan is the primary announcer for Arkansas's home games on the SEC Network Plus broadcast. He also calls college football for Touchdown Radio and college basketball for ESPN affiliates. For 7 years, he was the play-by-play man for the Houston Astros, so he knows Minute Maid Park about as well as anyone who will be there this weekend. He and former big leaguer Pat Combs will be on the call for all three of Arkansas's games on AT&T Sportsnet. Those games will also be streamed on MLB.com. Astros.com, and through the MLB At-Bat app. Brett is a great baseball observer. He's a friend of our podcast. And Brett, we appreciate you coming on today.
My pleasure. Always good to talk college baseball in the depths of February.
So this has got to be an interesting weekend for you, Brett, because, of course, you were an Astros announcer for a while, and now you do a lot of Razorback stuff for the SEC Network. I wonder what it's like seeing maybe those two worlds collide this weekend in Houston.
Well, it is a lot of fun. I went back last year and was able to work six games and kind of be back in my old stomping grounds. But this year, with the Razorbacks coming back for the first time, I think in what would be four seasons, maybe it's a little extra special. And I think just the format, Matt, too, when you have the SEC teams and the Big 12 teams, certainly it creates a lot of interest because, you know, I think Arkansas and a few other teams will have a little better idea of where they are in the early season once they get done playing this type of competition in a big league ballpark for 3 days.
This has really become a big event in college baseball, at least in the South, with teams from the SEC and Big 12. You just don't see a whole lot of events like this where you really pack it full of quality teams. Arkansas is always good. LSU is always good. Texas is usually a good program. You've got Oklahoma this year that can pitch. You know, it's a really intriguing event, I think.
What is? I believe it's the 20th year they've done this, and I call it the premier early season collegiate baseball event. And I know there have been a few other entities and communities that have tried to build something, such as Round Rock and Corpus Christi, as you know, and the Razorbacks will find out. Dallas is going to try this here up very soon, and there are a few other imposters. Arkansas played in the Tony Gwynn Classic a few years ago, but I don't think there's anything, you know, quite like this event. And you're right. It's definitely the teams, but it's also the fan bases that you bring into this facility with LSU, Arkansas, and Texas all there the same weekend. And for the first time that I can remember in a long time, the weather looks like it'll cooperate. It could just be an amazing environment for college baseball. And that's why I continue to support this event. I'm glad the Razorbacks are back. And certainly when they're in this event with the likes of Texas and LSU, among others, it certainly just continues to bolster its reputation and its place amongst these events in college baseball.
Yeah, you know, the good thing about Houston, unlike Round Rock or Frisco or some of these others, they can close the roof if they do have bad weather. And, you know, they're guaranteed to get the games in. Dave Van Horn said after the Gonzaga series, that was one of the things he loved about going to Houston, is that he knows you're not going to travel, you know, a long way away early in the season and have games rained out or canceled or postponed or something, that you're going to be able to get those games in. You know, Brett, I wonder, you've seen most of the games so far for Arkansas. They're 7-0, maybe, you know, about what people expected to this point. But I wonder what you've thought about their start. Has there been anything that has surprised you to this point in the year?
Well, I think the one thing I do, and I probably should know better, but I still can't break myself of this. I think we make a lot of assumptions after one weekend. And then it's amazing how things change quickly for two or three weekends. And, you know, Robert Moore is a good example of that. 1-for-12 and looked a little bit overwhelmed in the first weekend. And then he's the national player of the week by some services in week two. Webb scored 7 runs in the first game. It looked like he had a lock on the leadoff spot. And then he struggles a bit in the second week. And I think the one thing that I think everybody's probably curious, and this is really what I'm interested this weekend, Matt, is who might emerge to be that third starter candidate? Is somebody going to have a great performance, whether it's in a 3-4 inning start or maybe 3 innings in relief on that Sunday game that gives them an opportunity going forward against South Alabama and so on and so forth? So I don't think I'm any different than some of the other coaches. They're curious to see who might step up on the big stage against different competition than they played the first two weekends. But for me, that's what I'm looking, who's going to solidify either a role in that bullpen, maybe a third start. And then there still seems to be a little bit of playing time out there for Dave Van Horn, whether it's a Gregory, whether it's a Webb, or however he wants to manipulate some of those extra spots in his lineup, you know, as we get a little bit closer towards conference play.
Let's talk about Robert Moore. Are we making too much of what he did against Gonzaga? You know, is it a matter of one good weekend, or do you think this is something that's sustainable for him?
I suppose we probably overreact a little bit on good or bad. I think the one thing, Matt, that I was interested in is just his plate coverage, right? I mean, the kid's able to bat right-handed, left-handed, able to put the ball in play. We both saw a little bit of power out of him in some of the scrimmages, which doesn't quite fit our eyes with his body type, but it's there. It isn't necessarily, you know, a powerful swing, but it's bat speed that generates the opportunity for him to do some special things. But it was the play that he made at second base. It was stealing a couple of bases. It was a heads-up play, taking off to third and getting a stolen base when the Zags weren't paying attention to him. That got my attention, that's for sure. And it's amazing. We think that this story is fairly unique, and it's somewhat unique that a kid would bypass his senior year. But Baylor has a great infielder named Trey Richardson. We'll see this weekend. He's done the same thing. And there's players across the country that have done this, and I think as Moore realized that there are players out there that don't need that final season of high school baseball and might be able to get a jump start playing at the college level, I'm not so sure that we won't see more of it, so to speak, pun intended, I guess, going forward with other teams. But the fact that he could step in and have the success early is going to generate a little bit of attention for some of these kids that have played a lot of amateur baseball on the youth circuit, and their high school is probably 3 or 4 rungs down compared to some of the competition that they played at.
In the first weekend, Connor Nolan had such a great start, 11 strikeouts against Eastern Illinois. Patrick Wicklander had struggled even going back into the preseason some with his command, but I thought the other day when he came out and pitched in the third game against Gonzaga, I thought he pitched about as well as I've seen him pitch since he's been with the Razorbacks.
I agree, and I think the confidence that he's going to gain from a couple of starts, if he can put 2 or 3 of those together, is going to be really impressive, because his skill set and just being a left-hander in the middle of that rotation certainly, I think, adds a lot to what Arkansas can do with the Nolan Wicklander. And I think we focused on who was going to be the Friday night guy, who was going to be the Saturday night guy. In reality, I think they're going to push each other a lot over the course of this year, maybe a little bit of staff rhythm and see if one can outdo the other, or one has a good weekend, one has a better weekend. But I'm with you. I think there's a lot that Wicklander brings that's going to make him not just a good starter this year, but over the next couple of seasons.
Dave Van Horn has talked a lot about how he thinks that this bullpen might be the deepest that he's ever had. It's inexperienced. You do have some experience in there, say like a Kevin Copps and a Cole Ramage. But for the most part, it's a lot of pitchers who haven't really pitched in the roles that they're being expected to pitch in this year. And that's kind of been the story for Arkansas the last few years. And, you know, they've made it work the last two. I wonder what you've seen from the bullpen, though, you know, through these first couple of series. Who are some of the arms that have stood out to you?
Well, I think if I had to just throw a label out there to begin with, it is raw arms. And there's probably six or seven guys that fit into that type of conversation that there may be a little variance week to week on who's going to pitch well and who's not. And I think Dave, even after that first weekend, said, we have a lot of guys that can go out there for one inning and look good, but the second inning's a little bit rough for them. And I think as we go forward, we might find a few guys that if they could put together two good innings, they're going to get a lot of opportunities. And if they struggle in that second, they may not. But, you know, whether it's Trest or Burton, Monk's intriguing as well. I haven't seen a lot of Morris, but I think we will. And Adams, I think, has much better stuff than maybe his numbers would indicate over 3 1/3 innings, certainly less than 4 innings. But it's just one after another of 18, 19-year-old guys that can throw low to mid-90s with the secondary pitch. So I think if there's any stretch of games, it was probably starting last weekend through the next couple of weeks where we're going to find out a lot about these guys. But I think Coach Hobbs and Coach Van Horn have enough depth where they can find two or three of these guys that want to contribute. And those that don't aren't written off for the rest of the year. But I do find it a little bit different than years past, especially because there isn't a Matt Cronin at the back end. But it's going to be a lot of fun to watch this play out.
Brett, what do you make of Casey Martin's start to the season? You know, he had such a kind of an up and down year last year, led the SEC in errors, had so many strikeouts. And, you know, the question was whether or not he could improve in those two areas. And through, you know, two weekends right now, he's got three errors from his spot at shortstop. You know, he's still striking out, eight strikeouts. It's tied for the team lead, batting .208. But he's also getting on base at about a .400 clip. He's taking some walks. So, I mean, how do you, as you watch this, how do you kind of gauge the struggles that he seems to be having with the fact that he's still, you know, even with the strikeouts, he's a productive hitter at the plate?
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there. The way that he was pitched around that first weekend was part of it. I think probably the most concerning thing for me is some of the routine plays that he hasn't made. Mm-hmm. Maybe just going too fast, the ball kicks behind him. The strikeouts, I think, would probably alarm some people, but I keep waiting for that to change, or his aggressiveness, which can be his greatest weakness, that's also his greatest strength, kind of kick back in and have a big weekend, or for that matter, 2 or 3 weeks. Yeah, I felt like there was a conversation I had with Casey not that long ago where he talked about last season where he felt like he was chasing stats. You know, you have such an amazing freshman year and people expect you then to be better your second year, and it doesn't always work out that way, which I think throws back into the consistency that Kerstad has had, and that's a separate story for how he's been able to kind of continue to put up numbers while people identify him too. With Casey, you know, at the beginning of last year, Matt, when you watched some of his scrimmages right before the 2019 season started, it felt like every time I was there, he was hitting home runs. He was just dynamite. And then when the regular season started, it became a struggle. And this year, I think we saw him struggle in some of the exhibition games or the preseason games and the scrimmages. And we allowed him a little bit of slack because of the hamate bone and losing some time in late last fall. But that struggle has carried over a little bit to the regular season. And I thought maybe he would just kind of get his legs underneath him and begin to dominate a bit in the non-conference games. It hasn't happened. So my fear is that this doesn't linger too much longer, where it becomes the topic of conversation, not just with us, but with other coaches, with scouts, as they look at Casey and evaluate him. We've both seen his projections in Baseball America's mock draft, and there was a time last year he was 4 or 5. I think the last time I checked, he was 23rd, which is still fantastic. It still sets him up for a possible first-round pick along with Heston Kerstad. But you would have to be a strong individual to be able to block out that conversation. And the one press conference Casey did, I think, before the Eastern Illinois series, I looked at him and I told him afterwards, I felt like I was talking to a 6 or 7 year big league veteran. As calm as he was up there interacting with the media and the way he was able to just navigate through the questions and look pretty confident, that same type of confidence, if you will, or just his advanced approach, I think, needs to kick in on the field. And I think it can. But you and I both know that once things linger for 2 or 3 weeks, it becomes a talking point, and then it becomes even harder to kind of get back on track or chase some numbers. So this might be another big weekend for Casey. And if nothing else, Matt, I hope that these pitchers are more willing to challenge him. It's pretty easy when you're Gonzaga or Eastern Illinois to say, we're not going to pitch to this guy or this guy. When you're Baylor, when you're Oklahoma, whether you're Texas, you might say, you know what, we're going to put our big guys up against their big guys and see who comes out and has the most success. And if that's the case, then Casey has a chance to not be pitched around and to see if he can get a couple of hits that might snowball things for him in a positive direction.
Three of those strikeouts came against Alex Jacob the other day for Gonzaga. And I talked to Nate Thompson after the series. He said they may not see a better breaking pitch than what he threw all season long. It almost seemed like that was a matter of Jacob's strength, that kind of, you know, cross face breaking pitch going up against maybe the, you know, the biggest weakness that Casey has at the plate, which is the pitch low and away.
True. And you know, we sometimes throw out a team like Gonzaga and say, well, they don't have the arms that Arkansas will see in a conference series, but there seems like there's one or two. There was Will Klein for Eastern Illinois that was awfully good right on right with mid-90s velocity. Jacob had the funky arm angle for Gonzaga. We've seen some good breaking pitches. So it's not as if these teams are incapable of putting up good pitchers and attacking hitters. So we'll see if that gets magnified over the course of 3 games at Minute Maid, where there's even more of those type of pitchers or players.
That's a good segue to what I want to talk about, Brett, finally, is the pitching that Arkansas is seeing in the preseason. You mentioned Klein, who's a potentially a high draft prospect. Jacob is a preseason All-American. I thought the pitcher that Gonzaga threw on Friday was really, really good. And now they're going to see Oklahoma and Cade Cavalli, maybe, you know, a first, second rounder who's got just, you know, great velocity, probably 96, 97, might be able to touch 98. I wonder, you know, just kind of what do you think about the pitching that they're seeing, and what do you expect from Cavalli this weekend in the first game in Houston?
Yeah, that's the one I think we've all been identifying for a couple of weeks because of his stuff. And he, you know, this will clearly be the biggest test for Arkansas, but this team is going to have games where they're going to struggle to score runs. I mean, last year they did strike out a lot at about 9 a game, and sometimes when you're trying to launch the home runs, it feeds into power pitchers and big strikeout numbers. So he's the best test, and he will be the first of many, even if we don't count Klein and Jacob and some of the other pitchers Arkansas has seen so far, but guys that legitimately could be first, second round picks. So, you know, you set your expectations a little bit lower. If this team can get 3-4 runs against Cavalli, you need to find a way to make a winning product out of that game. So he is one, though, that I think we're all curious to see, because not just his stuff in general, but how that plays against the Razorbacks and how it does against their lineup.
I can't remember a year where Arkansas is going to face as many big-time pitching prospects as they could potentially see this year. I know JT Ginn is hurt, but, you know, you could potentially see him in the SEC opener. Emerson Hancock, Cole Webb, Asa Lacy, just go on and on down the line. And it's just an incredible list of arms that the Razorbacks could face. And they're not even going to play Vanderbilt, who, you know, obviously has Kumar Rocker, and you've seen what Leiter has done here early in the season for them. And it just seems like the pitching in the SEC this year is as good as it's ever been, at least the frontline pitching.
Well, I can't argue with that, and you're right. When you start to run out those names and then to think they're not going to face Leiter or Rocker with a Vanderbilt team in the regular season, Hancock had the rough first start, which only means someone is going to pay for that down the stretch. And Asa Lacy was a guy, Matt, that last year I saw at the College Classic, and I came back after watching him throw 6 innings, and I thought he might have been the most dynamite pitcher that I saw in the first month and a half, and he's only gotten better too. So when you're right, when you start to look at the pitchers that Arkansas is going to face, it shows you the importance of what the Razorbacks have done in recent years, winning on Friday night. You know, you talk about winning series, you've got to go through the gauntlet of arms, and you've got to find a way to put up a win in game one to have a chance then to win one of the next two to claim a series. And as much as we think this team is just as good, if maybe even a little bit better in some areas than previous years, they're going to have to maintain that stretch of being able to knock off some of these top lines so that you don't have to come back and win on Saturday and Sunday to take two out of three.
Brett, I'll get you out of here on this. It seemed like in the four-game Gonzaga series, it took a village to call the games from a radio and TV perspective. Yourself, Benjamin Kelly, Phil Elson, Chuck Barrett filled in for a game. Have you ever had to leave a game in the middle of a game like you had to do in the Gonzaga series?
I would have to think about that. I think there may have been one time in the minor leagues, but it's pretty rare. I had to catch the last flight to get to Austin. I got in about midnight. I had a noon game on the Longhorn Network Saturday. I went straight to the airport. I had two flights to O'Hare. I took a two-hour drive to South Bend, got in there at 2 a.m., had a noon game at Notre Dame, went straight back to the airport and flew back on Sunday night. So it's been goofy for me. And with Phil, Phil's going to make the trip to Houston, which means Benjamin Kelly's going to fill in for him on women's basketball. Chuck filled in for both of them. Scott Inman's going to be in the mix somehow. So we've had backups to backups and great depth in broadcasters, both in radio and TV, that have allowed us to do this. I think it speaks to the chaos that is the end of February and March when you've got women's and men's basketball. You've got baseball, softball, and goodness knows what else is going on. But it's the chaotic stretch that I think we've all circled on our calendars for months, and we're going to be pretty happy when it's over, because I think I'm about maxed out. I would think Phil and Chuck and others probably feel the same way.
You'll call nine games in Houston, is that right?
I'm going to do six, because okay. I have the opportunity, Matt, to see my kid play twice on Thursday. I'm able to see him play Friday morning at a high school game and Saturday morning before I come in. So it was too good for me to pass up the chance to see him play four games at the same time that I get to call six. So it's going to be a big weekend for me.
Well, we wish you the best of luck, and hope you have a lot of fun watching what should be some good baseball in Houston this weekend.
Thanks, Matt. Always love the College Classic.
Want more coverage of your home team? Download the Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Check out the Fan Zone and get up-to-the-minute videos, podcasts, and features on football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. Search for Whole Hog Sports on Apple TV, Roku, and Amazon Fire at home. And take it with you on the go by downloading it for your mobile device in your app store. The Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Get it today.
Oklahoma enters Friday's game with a 7-2 record, which includes a series win over Virginia on opening weekend at a neutral site in Pensacola. The Sooners were predicted to finish fourth in the Big 12 by coaches in the preseason. Texas, who Arkansas plays on Saturday, was picked to finish fifth in the Big 12 this season, and Baylor, who Arkansas plays Sunday, was picked to finish sixth. Really behind Texas Tech, by the way, it feels like a toss-up in the Big 12 between about five or six teams, including all three of the ones that Arkansas will see in Houston this weekend. We're joined now by Eddie Radosovich, who covers OU baseball for Soonerscoop.com. Eddie, I appreciate you taking a little time for us today.
Hey, Matt, how's it going?
Doing well. Hey, so tell us some about the start that Oklahoma's had this year. They're 7-2. Of course, they beat Virginia in a couple of games in Pensacola. Seems like this is a pretty solid Sooner team.
Yeah, I think that this is probably one of the better teams that Skip Johnson had since he took over the helm. Obviously, their strength is starting on the pitching mound, and Arkansas will probably see their best pitcher, Kate Cavalli, on Friday. A little bit more athletic than they've been in the past. That was something that they tried to really kind of go out and I guess get better athletes. The freshman class is certainly a little bit faster, a little bit more speed out on the base paths. And, you know, I think that you can see that through the first nine games. They've already stolen 15 bases, and I think they only had 29 a year ago. So strength is pitching, and it's going to be kind of interesting. Just as much as anybody to see, you know, what this team is made out of. I think that they're kind of looking at this weekend as a real kind of measuring stick to see where they are as far as what this team can be and if they can compete in the Big 12 this year.
Seems like Oklahoma's program is kind of on the way up under Skip Johnson. You know, I read today where they've received a $1.1 million donation where they're going to upgrade their facility. It just seems like things are kind of looking up for him, and it seems like he's kind of got his footing now with that program.
Yeah, you know, I think taking over for Pete Hughes, who ironically is up at Kansas State now, still within the conference, there was never a connection there with the fan base. You know, they were coming off of an appearance in Omaha under Sonny Galloway, and then he jets to Auburn, and there just never really was that connection with back to the fan base. Pete Hughes has kind of come in from the Northeast. He was a Boston College guy, and just never really got it going at Oklahoma. Skip Johnson, I think, is more, I guess, kind of local to the area, coming up from Navarro, obviously all the time that he spent down in Austin with Augie. So he has a much better connection. He's brought a lot of players back into the program. You know, Kyler Murray was there just yesterday. So it seems to be moving in that direction. I think they're still about $12 million off of what they want to be able to have when they start the renovation to Eldell Mitchell. But, yeah, it does seem like they're headed in the right direction. And, you know, there's no better guy than Skip Johnson. I spent a couple of minutes with him, and you'll understand why they not only are starting to get guys to come back around the program a little bit more, but also probably recruiting at a higher level.
For any of us who watched Sonny Galloway there, that was such a great program during those years that he was Oklahoma's head coach, and it just seems so strange to see OU, you know, fall off maybe a little bit from where they were under him. We were talking earlier, Eddie, about the Big 12. Really, outside of Texas Tech, who was the preseason favorite in the conference, it kind of feels like there's about maybe five or six teams in that conference who, you know, really it's a toss-up for that second position. Of course, Oklahoma's in that group. I just wonder what you think about the conference this year, because Arkansas is going to be seeing two other teams from the Big 12 in Texas and Baylor this weekend.
Sure. Yeah, there's a lot of competition in the Big 12. I think it's still going to be a pretty good conference. You could probably argue that everybody's probably chasing Texas Tech. I think Oklahoma State would probably have something to say about that and what Josh Holliday has built into a program up in Stillwater, or continued on to a program up in Stillwater. I know they're excited to open Oak Break Stadium here in about a month up there. Mm-hmm. They have a star-studded assistant coaching staff. But, you know, Baylor's certainly in there. David Pearson hopes to have a bounce-back year with Texas. They're unbeaten, and I think that, you know, just as much as Oklahoma going into this weekend, I think it's Texas is kind of looking at this weekend as a little bit of a measuring stick to see where they are. So, you know, Baylor certainly, and with what Steve Rodriguez has done down in Waco, as you mentioned, is certainly in that mix. And I think Oklahoma, with what they have on the pitching mound, they feel like they can compete, and especially in a regional or even a super regional, just as much with anybody. So, you know, it's kind of going to be fun to see what the Big 12 teams bring to Minute Maid this weekend down in Houston.
We've seen Oklahoma, because they came over to Fayetteville in September and played that 14-inning scrimmage mm-hmm. here. And those pitchers really held down Arkansas's lineup, unlike, you know, maybe a lot of pitching staffs would be able to do. And I know it's a scrimmage, and, you know, they play scrimmages different ways. But we know about the pitching staff, and Dave Van Horn talked the other day about how he thinks that Oklahoma's pitching staff might be one of the best in the country from top to bottom. But what about the lineup? What does Oklahoma have from an offensive perspective, and who are some of the players to watch this weekend?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny that there's been a lot of talk about that mini scrimmage out in Fayetteville as far as kind of an emphasis for Oklahoma and for the players that they were heading in the right direction. And I think that they walked away from that weekend thinking that things were moving in the right direction. And certainly with some of the guys that they have returning from last year, you know, Tanner Treadaway out in the outfield is coming off of a Big 12 player of the week, and which he hit 500 over the weekend against Illinois State. You know, up the middle, Brandon Zaragoza and Connor McKenna, defensively probably just as good as anybody that they think. They think they have two of the better infielders or middle infielders in the country between those two. You know, Tyler Harbin had a really good year, or I guess a really good summer out on the Cape, and he's hit the ball well, as you know, I guess as well as he can here through the first nine games of the season. I don't think that they're a team that's going to be just completely someone that bowls you over with power, but they do hope to string hits together and manufacture runs. Skip Johnson talked a lot about, you know, if they can just do the little things right, move runners around, get hits with two outs, get hits with two strikes, they feel like they have enough guys that have, I guess experience would probably be the right word, that they think will benefit them down the road. And, you know, I think that you look at a guy like a Brandon Zaragoza, who You know, he's not going to probably hit 400 all year, but he's certainly a guy that is smart enough to be able to place the ball around, and they hope to just manufacture runs. So it's a veteran group. You know, Peyton Graham is kind of the, I guess, in a way, the odd man out. He's starting as a true freshman at third base. They think his future is extremely bright. He had a good weekend against Illinois State and looked a little bit more comfortable than the opening weekend against Virginia. So this will certainly be a little bit of another step up in competition for him. But, you know, they do have a lot of guys that have played a lot of innings in Norman, and they certainly think that this could be a special group when it's all said and done.
This is the first of two meetings between Arkansas and OU this year. They'll play again March 17th at Chickasaw Ballpark or Bricktown Ballpark in Oklahoma City. For Arkansas fans who'll be making that trip, tell us some about the Bricktown area and what that's like, and why did that game get moved from Norman to Oklahoma City?
Yeah, you know, I think that they are trying to take advantage of having a AAA stadium just up the road. You know, it's kind of funny that the Oklahoma basketball team actually played at Chesapeake Arena on Tuesday against Texas Tech in a conference game. So I would say if you haven't been to Oklahoma City in probably the last 5 to 10 years, it's probably grown a little bit and not what you expect to come and see. You know, they do have a nice little, I guess not little, it's a restaurant area in Bricktown. It's kind of the entertainment district, if you will, of Oklahoma City. And, you know, the Oklahoma AAA baseball team plays there, the AAA affiliate of the Los Angeles Dodgers. So, they had quite a few players come through that stadium here over the last couple of years, whether it be Cody Bellinger or the Taylor kid that's starting, I believe, at shortstop for the Dodgers now. But, you know, it's a nice area. I don't know if in the middle of April the Thunder might be in town that weekend, so it'd be a fun trip if they're looking to make the visit.
So Arkansas and Oklahoma, this will be the first time they played in 8 years in a game, which is just so hard to believe. You go back to when their series started in 1970. It's the longest they've ever gone between playing one another. Used to, this was a series, as you know, Eddie, that would be a lot of times they'd play maybe a home and home even in the same season on a Tuesday night, you know, maybe in March or in April. I wonder what, from the Oklahoma perspective, what are the thoughts of Arkansas? Because it seems like this is a game that ought to be played a lot, because the drive from Fayetteville to Norman's just 3.5 hours. And of course, these are, you know, two high quality programs.
Sure. I'm all for it. I think it's something that is, you know, honestly, it's kind of missing in this region, at least. You look at Oklahoma or you look at Oklahoma State and the games that they had, you know, and it seems like Dallas Baptist has been that team for Oklahoma here over the last couple of years that really kind of become a quote unquote, I guess, midweek non-rival, if you will. And I think it would be, I'd be all for it if they could get Oklahoma and Arkansas, even if they wanted to step outside of baseball, get football and basketball on the schedule. I think it would be fun for both fan bases. You know, certainly with the baseball and the way that, you know, Van Horn has things moving with the Arkansas baseball team in Fayetteville, I Oklahoma, this is certainly a game that they are looking at as a major measuring stick to see where they are. And I think it's fun for both fan bases that, you know, they're kind of getting this opportunity, you know, not only to see them play down in Houston, which has a large Oklahoma contingent and fan base and alumni association, but, you know, I think it will be fun for everybody here in a couple of weeks when they play the return game in Oklahoma City.
Eddie, I'm not sure the Razorbacks are ready to play the Sooners yet in football.
Oklahoma's just looking for they're trying to schedule as many wins as possible. Okay.
Yeah. But you know, I mean, the way they schedule football games now, it's usually about what, 13 to 15 years out, so you don't really know what you're going to get. Arkansas played USC in 2000.
You'll get a 2060 and a 2062 return date or something like that.
Exactly. I'm always reminded of that. Arkansas played USC in 2005 and 2006, and there were two of the worst losses Arkansas has ever had. Of course, those were the teams that had Matt Leinart and Reggie Bush, and Pete Carroll was the head coach. But when they scheduled USC, I think they were coming off like a 5-6 season. Nobody saw what they were about to do under Pete Carroll. So
I love when those announcements come out. I think OU just announced home and home with it was maybe a year ago. I think they have it with Clemson in 2028 or 2030. And at the time when they announced it, those kids were going to be in like seventh grade. So that stuff always, I get a kick out of it.
I always like to go back and look at those releases and see how many of the head coaches are still there who are quoted in the releases and the ADs. Now, I know at Oklahoma, Joe Castiglione and Bob Stoops, they've given you some longevity. But at a lot of schools, you don't see that. Eddie, we really appreciate your time. And for Arkansas fans looking to follow Oklahoma this weekend, go read Eddie's work at Soonerscoop.com.
I appreciate it anytime. Look forward to it.
Again, Arkansas will play Oklahoma at 3 o'clock Friday, Texas at 7 o'clock Saturday, and Baylor at 7 o'clock Sunday in the Shriners Classic at Minute Maid Park. We have reporters in Houston. We'll have coverage all weekend at WholeHogSports.com. Be sure to visit our baseball forums while you're there, where you can interact with our reporters 7 days a week. Visit WholeHogSports.com/subscribe for more information, and remember that your subscription to the Democrat Gazette also includes access to our site. Our thanks to Brett Dolan and Eddie Radosovich for being part of this week's show. Thanks also to Dudley Dawson and Seth Campbell for their contributions. We would also like to thank our sponsor, First Watch, a great breakfast, brunch, and lunch destination with locations in Fayetteville, Rogers, and Bentonville. For an experience that feels good and tastes even better, visit First Watch today. By supporting them, you are supporting our podcast, and we thank you. We'll be back next week to talk about what we learned in Houston and to preview Arkansas's final weekend non-conference series against South Alabama. Until we see you here again, we'll see you at WholeHogSports.com. I'm Matt Jones. Have a great week, everyone.
The proceeding has been a production of WholeHogSports.com. Look for our latest podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, or your favorite podcast store. And visit us anytime at WholeHogSports.com for the latest news and commentary.